it. Not badly, and not for long, but I was looking into his eyes at the last, and I saw. She shuddered and released a ragged breath. Don't think about it, Daphne urged. It's over now, and he's at peace. What happened next? It sounded incredible, like something from one of Vev Gertzik's improbable novels. Circle members hidden in the crowd, tampering with Doran and Glimfire. The hooded axeman, one of their own, striking the head from a man already heart-stopped, so living Asher might be whisked away in the shouting confusion. Fire. Alarm. Hysteria. I thought for a moment we'd not survive it, Vera admitted after another swallow of tea. There was screaming, trampling. I couldn't see a foot in front of me, and if I'd fallen, no one would have stopped to lend a hand. Our people there saved us, bundled us into blankets and spirited us to the livestock quarter right under the noses of the guards. It was all such pandemonium. I didn't even realize Matthias wasn't with us until we'd reached the horses and wagon, and it was time to go. Her hand still on Vera's, Daphne tightened her fingers. It wasn't your fault. You said it yourself. Saving Asher was the most important thing. Matt's a strong man, and resourceful. He'll find his way back to us. I know it. But she sounded more confident than she felt. Vera pulled her hand free and pushed slowly to her feet. I'm sure you're right, child. But what say we see for certain, eh? I'll sleep easier knowing he's on his way here. Let me. You're too tired to scry tonight, Vera. Vera frowned. And you're with child. What do you mean? Daphne said, alarmed, and leaped from her chair, palms pressed to a still flat belly. I scried when I got here. Have I harmed the baby? No, no, I shouldn't think so, said Vera, and pressed her back in the chair. Tennel's not a poison, Daphne. Chewed and not swallowed, it does no harm, but better safe than sorry. Besides, I'm old, and I'm tired, but I'm not so decrepit I can't find our Matthias this once. Then at least let me fetch what's necessary. Sit down and finish your tea. Eat another biscuit. You'll need your strength. Pretending to grumble, Vera obeyed. Daphne gathered the basin, the water, the herbs, laid them neatly before the old woman, then withdrew to lean herself against the sink, one ear cocked in case Asher should wake and make a sound. She was too nervous to sit again until she knew Matt was all right. Javale, are you listening? He'd better be all right. Unhurried and methodical, Vera readied herself for the scrying. Chewed the tannel, spat it out, closed her eyes, and waited. It seemed to take forever. I have him, Vera whispered at last. A slow smile spread over her tired, wrinkled face. He's safe. He's coming. And with company. Company? Daphne leaped to the table and stared into the scrying water, even though she knew she'd see nothing. Who? An old man, Olkin, and a handsome young Doranan fellow. They're travelling in a donkey cart. A handsome young Doranan? Could it be... Gar? She said, incredulous. He's bringing Gar here? Why? Vera shrugged. No doubt he has his reasons, child. Not good ones! Who's the old Olkin man, do you think?
I don't know for certain, but if the Doranan is Gar, then that has to be Darren, the royal secretary.
Dazed, she paced the kitchen floor.
I don't believe this.
What is he thinking?
Her pleasure at Matt's survival was doused now with ire. Once it's realized Gar's missing, Geralt won't rest till he's found him. He'll peer under every blade of grass in the kingdom. We'll all be discovered.
When Matt gets here, I'll kill him!
Slowly, Vera opened her eyes and eased herself out of the Tannel's clawing grasp.
No, you won't, child. You'll listen to his story with your tongue behind your teeth. There's been enough killing for now.
That silenced her. When she could trust her temper again, she asked with restraint,
How long till they reach us?
Vera shrugged.
The countryside is the same for miles and miles between us and the city. I can't quite tell where they are. They'll be here by and by, child. That's all I can say for certain.
Suddenly queasy, Daphne dropped into a chair.
Good. That's good.
But what Asher would say when he found himself in such a houseful, she hadn't the faintest idea.
Our maid'll be waking soon, I'm thinking, said Vera, clearing the scrying things away. And it's nigh on dinner time. Cook us a meal, child, and I'll sit with Asher till he stirs.
Daphne nodded. She wanted to feel angry at Vera's high-handedness, to feel outraged and proprietary and indignant for her rights where Asher was concerned, but instead she felt relieved and then guilty. She was desperate to see him. She was frightened to see him. All the hidden truths would soon be laid bare.
It'll be fine, said Vera. Her eyes were warm and knowing. If we trust to prophecy, it'll be just fine.
In his dreams, Asher was sailing. The sky was a blue bowl overhead, with little scudding clouds and the sun playing peekaboo behind them. A salt-stiffened breeze snapped the sail against the masthead, the shirt on his back, the hair on his head. The fishing smack, not brand new but seaworthy all the same, gaily green and blue in her fresh coat of paint, plunged and curveted like an eager young filly, dipping low into Resthaven Harbour, with the heaving weight of her nets and the bounty they promised. Her name was Amaranda. Laughing, he reached out his hand to haul the first net back on board. Laughing, Dad joined him, and together they cracked their muscles, smiling with the effort, as the catch came over the side in all its wet-scaled, flapping glory.
"Dah!" said Asher, and sat up in his bed.
"Easy now," said a comfortable voice to his right. "You might find your head's gone all a bit whirligig."
It had. Dizzy, he flopped back on the pillows and waited for the spinning to stop. The voice was female, old, unfamiliar, as was the room.
"Where am I?"
"Safe."
There were no lamps lit. He couldn't see the speaker's face.
"Where?"
"In my house."
"And who are you?"
"A friend. The friend of friends. Be easy now. Your enemies are behind you and they'll not find you here."
He touched clumsy fingers to his neck.
"I ain't dead."
It came as a kind of discovery and a welcome surprise. A breathy chuckle.
"No, child, you ain't."
His mind was a jumble of memories. The cage, the square seething with sound and faces, the executioner with his axe, the glimfire which kept on sparking, how the wooden block felt pressed against his throat, the pain in his wrists and ankles as he walked towards his death, the stink of his own piss and sweat, Pellin's grim, unfeeling face. Gar. He tried to sit up again. For the first time in forever, his body was free of pain.
"How did I get here? What's going on? Sink me, woman! Who are you?"
A rough-palmed hand reached out of the darkness and held him down.
"People call me Vera."
His muscles felt like soggy bread.
"What people?"
"Just people."
"The folk who rescued me?"
"That's right."
He wished there were a few more candles burning so he could see this Vera's face.
"I want to meet him."
"No, you can't, child. Not yet. But one day soon, I hope. Prophecy willing."
prophecy? What was prophecy? Who are you to say no to me? I want to meet him, I said.
And I said not yet,
she snapped, her voice hardening. Another snatch of memory. Loud screaming and a harsh, urgent voice in his ear demanding,
Do you want to live?
Then he did sit up, never mind his weakened body or the hand still pressed against his shoulder. I remember you now. You were there. You saved my life.
A lot of people saved your life, child,
the old woman said. She sounded suddenly sad.
And one man in particular. I'll tell you about him by and by.
He sank to the pillows again, his body a traitor. Call me Asher. I ain't a child. A breath of amusement.
You are to me. To me, at my age, you're a spratling.
Spratling. That's a fishing word.
And you're a fishing man. Or you were, and hope to be again. But if you want that dream coming true, there's a thing or two you'll need to do first.
Show me your face, he said, suspicious. Why are we sitting in the dark? Can't you light a lamp or something?
Light one yourself, said the aggravating old besom. The glim fire's in you, along with everything else.
He stopped breathing. Didn't start again till his lungs began clamouring for mercy. That ain't funny.
And I'm not laughing. The time for hiding is past us, young Asher of Resthaven, though that's not the name I know you by.
He wasn't going to ask how she knew him, knew any of it. Wouldn't say another word until she lit a lamp and showed him her face and explained what he was doing here. She answered the unasked question anyway.
For 600 years, Asher, me and mine have known you as the innocent mage. Prophecy named you in the days of Barl and the making of her wall, when she sowed the seeds we're reaping as weeds today. You've a birthright, child, and the womb of the world is ready at last to spit you out in blood and pain.
He shook his head. You're crazy.
Am I?
She asked him. He heard a whispered word and felt a tremble of power. A tiny bloom of glimfire appeared hovering above her palm like a firefly. It illuminated the softly folded planes of her face and turned her dark eyes to gemstones.
You see, she said, smiling. You aren't the only one after all, but you are the very best.
He was too astonished to speak. She frowned at the glimfire.
Believe it or not, this used to be ours. The Doranan took it, of course, just like they took everything else, and our fool elders let 'em. Made their short-sighted bargain and dropped us all in a stinky, stinky soup.
He found his voice at last. I ain't got the first idea what you're wittering about. You called Glimfire. I thought I was...
Alone? The old woman chuckled. No, child, not alone. Every Olkin's got magic in him. What did you think happens at your sea harvest festival? You think the fish rise for a Doranan singing? No. They answer the call of the Ulkin. Lures fisherfolk using the power they were born with, all unknowing.
What? What do you mean? What? She raised her other hand.
Hush now. There's not much time for story spinning, so pin back your ears. And I'll tell you what's most needful.
The last time he'd let someone tell him a story, he ended up with his head on a chopping block. He kicked back the blankets. Don't bother. I ain't interested, and I ain't staying neither. She made no move to stop him, just watched as, betrayed by weakness, he crashed to the rug-covered floor, banged and bashed about, finding his feet. Staggered to the bedroom door, grabbed its handle, wrenched it open.
"Hello, Asher," said Daphne, smiling, shaking. "Please don't go yet. We've a lot to talk about."
After hours on the road, the elderly donkey was exhausted, so they climbed from the cart and walked for a while. Matt kept to the poor beast's head, guiding its tottering footsteps along the rutted roadway. Gar and Darren followed behind. It was the dark of the moon and the starlight was faint. Close ahead of them were the black woods and the mountains. This near to the wall, there should be a glorious wash of gold to help them find their way. But, cold, hungry, plagued with blisters and longing for this journey to end, Gar looked around. Apart from themselves, the road was empty. It should be safe to speak.
"Are my eyes playing tricks, Matt? Or does it seem to you the wall has faded?"
Matt's voice floated back to him out of the dark.
"No tricks. If what you say is true, if Morg is really among us, then it's my belief he's working to bring down the wall from inside the kingdom."
Envy prickled. Matt had already explained his peculiar sensitivities, his magic. It was all he'd explained. Up till now, the journey had been conducted almost in silence.
"You can feel that?"
"I can. Now, Gar, it's best we hold our tongues. Sound travels easier than we do this time of night."
Beside him, Darren bristled, deeply disapproving of his prince's instruction that Matt abandon formality and get used to calling him Gar. He chewed at his lip for a moment, debating. But it had to be said, before they reached their destination, which promised little relaxation. Now seemed as good a time as any. He lowered his voice.
"You lied to me, Darren."
Limping just a little, likely nursing blisters of his own, Darren kept his gaze pinned to the road.
"I'm sure I never did, sir."
"Don't make it worse, Darren. You lied. Asher doesn't forgive me. He hates me. I think he'd kill me if he could."
A fraught pause. Then Darren rallied.
"His Highness is mistaken. I distinctly recall."
He raised a finger.
"Don't. Not if you truly love me."
Silence, save for the creaking of the cart's wheels, the thudding of their feet onto the road's packed clay, and the donkey's laboured breathing.
"I only sought to ease your pain, sir," said Darren eventually, harshly whispering. "Asher was about to die. I saw no harm in—"
"I know why you did it," he said, biting back impatience. "And I'm grateful that you care. But it doesn't change the truth. Asher trusted me and I betrayed him to his death. He hates me for that. And I can't say I blame him."
"Well, I can," said Darren, indignant. "You did what you had to, what any king would."
"Exactly. I acted like a king, but what Asher needed was a friend."
"You've been a friend without peer, sir. He was a nothing, a nobody when he came to Dorana."
Gar shook his head.
"And now he's a fugitive, destined for death if he's discovered. And all because of me. I swore on my life I'd protect him, Darren, and instead of keeping my word, I abandoned him. I just pray that when we see him again, he'll not let his hatred of me stand in the way of helping us against Morg.
"He won't," said Matt from the gloom ahead. "He might hate you, but when he hears what you've got to say, he'll do what's needful, what's right."
"How can you be so sure?" he said, shivering.
"Because he's the innocent mage."
He frowned.
"And what is that exactly, Matt? I think it's time you told me what's going on. You do know, don't you?"
Darkly silhouetted, Matt nodded.
"I do."
"In the guardhouse, you mentioned a circle. What did you mean?"
"I meant I'm not alone," said Matt. "Me, Daphne, the folk who helped save Asher, were magicians. Not like the Dorinan. Our magic's different. But we have a power like your people do. We're joined in secrecy and silence, bound to serve prophecy and Asher, the innocent mage.
And does Asher know this?
He didn't, but I'd say there's a good chance he does by now. By now, he likely knows everything.
When last Gar saw him, Asher was kneeling with his head on a block, waiting for a sharpened axe to fall. Remembering that stark, cruel moment, he felt his bowels constrict. What would happen when Asher came face to face with the architect of his torment and near destruction? Matt seemed certain he'd forgive and forget. For himself, he wasn't anywhere close to confident. He had his own suspicions, and they threatened to drop him where he walked. He increased his pace till he fell into step beside his former stablemeister. "I think, Matt," he said, letting his concern show, making it an order and not a request, "that if we want to make sure Asher's with us, not against us, it's time I knew everything too." Chapter 32. Bundled back into the saggy single bed by that bossy Vera, Asher stared at Daphne as though she were a ghost. Nasty suspicions were stirring in his mind, churning in his belly. It didn't help she was having trouble meeting his eyes.
"Daph," he said softly, willing her to look at him. "Daph, what are you doing here? What's going on?"
Still, she kept her gaze pinned to the floor. Now a lamp was lit, and he could see her clearly. She looked frightened. He'd never seen her frightened before. Angry, impatient, uncertain, but never rigid with fear like this. She stood with her back pressed hard to the closed bedchamber door, her fingers fisted by her sides. Retreated to the bedroom shadows, Vera sat like a pile of laundry in a ratty, overstuffed armchair shoved in a corner, and watched them. He ignored her.
"Daph, talk to me. How did I get here? Who's this Vera and what's she to you? Tell me. Tell me."
In a dark corner, the old woman stirred.
"Well, child, you started this. Seems to me you should finish it."
Daphne looked up. Her eyes were enormous.
"Asher, do you love me?"
He scowled.
"I married you, didn't I? Though it's starting to look like I made a mistake."
She flinched as though he'd struck her. In a way, he had. He didn't care. If she was frightened, he was terrified.
"I've a story to tell you, Asher."
Her voice was a whisper.
"Will you promise to listen? Not judging till you know all the facts?"
It was the first of Tevet's principles of jurisprudence. Anger burned him.
Did she think it was funny, throwing Justice Hall in his face now, after everything he'd been through?
She saw her error, reached out to him alarmed.
"Please, Asher, listen. You'll understand everything by the time I'm done.
Understand what I'm doing here. What you're doing here, how I escaped and how she can do magic?"
Daphne crept to the chair beside the bed and slid into it. Looked where he was pointing, at the silently watchful old woman, and nodded.
"Everything. I promise."
"Daphne."
He felt sick. His heart was beating so hard.
"Can you do magic?"
Tears flooded her eyes, overflowed down her cheeks.
"I couldn't tell you any more than you could tell me. Secrecy was the only thing that saved us. Remember that before you judge me."
She could do magic. Everything about her was a lie. He turned his face away.
"Reckon I'd rather forget."
"You can't. You mustn't.
or the kingdom will fall into chaos and nothing you love will survive." Without another word spoken, he knew what went on here was dangerous. Madness. Worse than anything Gar had tricked him into. He didn't want to know more. Wished almost he was dead, his head and his body in two separate pieces, fed to the dogs as Geralt had promised. Geralt. As always, Daphne read him. "You're safe, Asher. I promise. No one's hunting you. Conroy Geralt believes you're dead." Still, he couldn't look at her. He'd need a body for that.
"He's got one."
Now he looked.
"You murdered someone?"
"Geralt's the murderer, not Daphne," said Vera from the shadows. "Raefel was one of us. He gave his life willingly, because it was needful, and his birthright."
He kept his gaze pinned to Daphne. "So all of this is part of a plan?" She nodded.
"Yes, one set in motion centuries before either of us were born."
"And me? What am I?" She sat a little straighter in her chair, unclenched her fingers and laid them softly on her knees.
"You are the innocent mage, Asher, born to save the kingdom from blood and fire."
He couldn't answer. Could only lie there and stare at this woman, this stranger. Had he kissed her? Had he married her? He'd never seen her before in his life.
"I know this is difficult," she said. "It's not easy for me either. Things happened I should have prevented."
"Like spreading your legs for me?" She blanched.
"Like falling in love."
"Is that what you call it?"
he said, and laughed. His stomach was full of acid, churning. She turned her face from him.
"Matt warned me this would happen. I was a fool not to listen."
"Matt warned?" He struggled to sit up. "Matt's a part of this?"
"We're all of us a part of it, child," said Vera from the darkness. "Whether we know it or don't. What's coming comes to everyone trapped behind the mountains, and unless we work together, no matter our pride and hurt feelings, the thing that's coming will kill every last one of us. Is that what you want on your conscience?"
"I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you mean."
"Then let me tell you," said Daphne. "Forget what hurts I've done you, and just listen to the words. I swear they're true."
All the wounded places in his body were awake again, and burning. His head pounded. He wanted to flee, but his legs were too weak. He was pinned beneath the blankets, captive, as he'd been captive one way or another, all his damned life.
"Have I got a choice?"
he said bitterly. Vera answered him.
"Always, child. We can't compel you to do what's right."
No, they bloody couldn't. They couldn't compel him to do anything, magic or no magic, and woe to them if they bloody well tried. He had a little magic of his own. As for right and wrong, Daphne had a hide to think she could give him a lecture on that. All these secrets, the people in his life he'd trusted, leaned on, and none of them what he'd thought they were. Vera said, quite kindly,
"Your pricked pride is the least of our worries, child. Hear Daphne out, then tell me we were wrong."
"Pricked pride?
Pricked pride?" He nearly flung the words back in her face, came close to kicking aside the blankets and getting out of there, no matter if it meant crawling on hands and knees. But curiosity won over outrage. Just.
"Fine," he grunted, and folded his arms. "I'm listening."
The Doranan who came over the mountain 6 centuries ago were nothing like the Doranan he knew today, Daphne told him. Those Doranan were a bright and brittle people, weary and battle-scarred and desperate for peace. Their magic was a thing of violence. With it they called nightmares out of hiding and gave them life, gave them teeth to bite and talons to tear, flattened buildings, razed whole towns, slaughtered thousands. They were warriors, and in their eyes were memories of the homeland they'd left behind them, memories of carnage and what it had cost them to escape. Led by a young woman named Baal, they'd fled their war-torn Dorna in terror, crossing countless miles of country, burying loved ones as they came. Confronted by the mountains, they'd not turned back, but instead clawed their way over them and down into Lur, and there found the safe harbor for which they'd long been searching. They had no intention of giving it up, of struggling back over the mountains, losing even more of their friends and family on the way, so they might die in the monstrous mage war they'd so narrowly, so dearly escaped. No matter that this new land wasn't theirs to take. No matter it already had inhabitants who loved it. They were a race for whom wanting became having without a second thought. And they wanted Lur. The people they found here called themselves Oaken. They were a gentle race with magics of their own, an earthbound power tying them to the land, to green and growing things, to the ebb and flow of natural energies. They lived in loosely allied independent communities scattered from coast to coast, with no central government, no king or queen. They had no hope of defeating the warrior Dorinan, no chance of resisting the lure of Dorinan magic. It was splendid, miraculous. There was nothing it couldn't do. It even let the Olkin understand the beautiful invaders and be understood in return. Not long after her people's arrival, Baal gathered all the Olkin community leaders together and explained about the conflict in her homeland, about Morg, and how defenseless they were against him, how he would not rest till he found her and her people and punished them for fleeing, and then take every Olkin as a slave, or worse. It so happened that in that time the Olkin people were suffering. Drought and famine gripped their land, and not even their strongest earth-singers could save them. Baal saw their dilemma, and made them a glittering offer. Share their homeland with the Dorinan, abandon their meager magics and any memory of them, and she would create a paradise safe not only from Morg, but from all the natural sufferings their earthbound lives were prey to. The Olkin and Dorinan would live together in perfect harmony, perfect peace, safe, secure and prosperous, hidden from the rest of the world beyond the mountains, until the end of time. Daphne stopped talking. The room was so quiet, Asher thought he could hear the spiders breathing. "This ain't the story my ma told me when I were a spratling," she nodded. "It wasn't. That story was a lie."
"But you know the truth," he sneered. "How, if the Olkin agreed to forget it? Or is this just another lie, made up to get you what you want? From me?"
He could see his words hurt her, and was glad. He'd meant them to. "One Olkin voice spoke out against the bargain," she continued, her hands folded tightly in her lap. Her eyes were bright in the dim lighting. "His name was Javale, and I am his last living heir, inheritor of his visions and the prophecy they foretold." Javale was known in his own small community as something of a seer, a man whose dreams had the knack of coming true. As a small boy, he'd had visions of a golden-haired people who'd bring the Olkin to ruin. He didn't know who they were or when they'd come or what form that ruin would take. Years passed, he grew up, and the visions faded from memory. Then the Dorinan came, and with them returned foreboding dreams. They told him the heart of the sweet fruit they offered was rotten, and that one day it would lead to his people's death. Javel tried to warn the Olkin elders, but they were too Doran and dazzled to listen, Daphne said. She sounded sad, regretful. They didn't know him, or have reason to trust in his prophecies. In this prophecy, the most important of all. With children dying of hunger and thirst, the Doranin were the answer to our prayers, or so it seemed.
Seemed? He said. Sounds like they were, if folks were starving to death. Sounds to me like your precious Javel didn't give a fart about that.
Of course he did, but he could see further than a season's shortage of food. He knew. Baal was right. Something dark and dreadful did lurk beyond the barrier of mountains. And he knew this too. That for all their fearsome magic, the Doranin would not be able to stand against it. Somehow Olkin magic would have a part to play in protecting Lur. One day an Olkin would be born whose destiny was to save us all in the final days. He named him the Innocent Mage. He stared at her, unconvinced.
And you reckon that's me?
She nodded.
Yes, you are prophecy's child, Asher, born to save the world as Javel foretold.
Born to save the world? Him? It sounded so ridiculous. He was hard put not to laugh out loud. But he didn't, because her expression was so serious. Clearly she believed every word she'd said, and right now he was at her mercy. One word in the wrong ear from her or the old woman in the corner, and he'd be back on his knees before the chopping block. Besides, there were still things he wanted, needed, to know.
And what about you? He said. How did you come into this, eh?
She glanced at Vera, then rested her gaze on the foot of his bed.
I am Javel's heir, his descendant, inheritor of his visions and knowledge. I've dreamed you most of my life, Asher. Knew you for who and what you are long before we met.
Dreamed him? Knew him? Oh, he didn't like the sound of that. Didn't like it at all.
And Matt?
He pointed at the old woman brooding in her corner.
Her? How do they fit in with your precious prophecies?
Now her fingers laced themselves together to still their trembling. And well she should tremble too. What she'd done.
When he realized his warnings would not be heeded, Javel went home and gathered to him his closest friends, she said. Those who knew his visions could be trusted and believed his prophecy would come true. Together they swore an oath to hold the Olkin's magical heritage in sacred trust, generation after generation, until the Innocent Mage was born and needed Olkin magicians to stand with him in the final days. Together they devised a way to protect themselves from the Doranin's purge. They called themselves the Circle. Vera, Matt, and I are all of the Circle. There are others, scattered throughout the kingdom, but only Vera knows who they are. Like me, they are descended from the Olkin of Baal's time. Like me, they've lived their lives with only one purpose, to defeat the evil that will come in the final days, that has come, Asher. The final days are upon us now.
He shook his head, rejecting her and everything she'd said. Prophecies, visions, secret societies of Olkin magicians. It was crazy. Crazy!
You're mad, he said, scathing.
Stark, staring, moonstruck.
You expect me to believe?
You have to believe it, she cried.
Every word is the truth.
The truth? Scalded with sudden fury, he kicked back his blankets and lunged off the bed at her, seizing the arms of her chair and prisoning her in it.
You wouldn't know the truth if it bit you on the arse.
You've been lying to me since the day I turned up in Dorna.
Despite his rage, she didn't shrink back.
No, I haven't. Withholding information isn't telling lies. I was protecting you, Asher.
Protecting me? He said, incredulous.
From what? From accident? From yourself?
He leaned even closer, till he could feel her panting breath on his cheeks.
The only danger I've been in is from you. You should have found someone to protect me from you, Daphne.
That's not fair, she cried. You were never in danger from me.
He flung himself sideways and half-rolled, half-staggered to his feet.
Of course I bloody was!
He could see it all now. How she duped him, dudded him, played him like a puppet.
You arranged everything, didn't you? I don't know how, but you did. Me saving Gar's horse that morning in the market. Him thinking I was right to be his assistant. You practically dared me to take the job when I knew in my guts I shouldn't. Was it you made him think of me in the first place? One day when you were selling him a book? It was, wasn't it? For why, Daphne?
He pulled down the neck of his borrowed nightshirt, baring burned flesh to the light.
For this?
She stretched out an imploring hand.
No, no, of course not. I never dreamed you'd come so close to dying.
He stepped back. The touch of her now would make him vomit.
I don't believe you.
A cold thought struck him then. How much does Gar know? Are you in bed with him too? Did you dream this up together, you and him, with the sweat of your futtering still wet on your skin? Tears streaming, she leaped to her feet.
No! How can you say so? How can you think it?
Another thought, colder still. He made himself look in her face.
Timon spake.
Bewildered, smearing those pouring tears, she shook her head.
What?
They caught him trying to do magic, he shouted.
Was he one of yours? Was he part of your precious circle?
As Daphne struggled for words, for lies, Vera answered.
He was, child. A good boy, Timon, but foolish.
He turned on her.
And you didn't save him. You let him die.
The old woman stood and came forward into the light.
We couldn't save him. Timon knew that. He died with courage and will be remembered.
Courage. That poor sickly boy, and all the blood in him spilling. He stared at Daphne.
He was never your cousin. That was another lie.
Her stricken gaze flicked to Vera and back.
Forget Timon. Timon's dead. We must...
Why'd you bully me to let you see him, Daphne? What was so important?
Vera took a small step closer.
What's he talking of, child? When did you see Timon?
Beforehand, briefly, said Daphne. But that's in the past. Asher, listen.
And now he understood.
You were scared he'd talk out of turn. You thought he'd betray you.
His breath caught hard in his aching throat.
What was in them cakes you took him?
Cakes? Said Vera, frowning. You made no mention of cakes, child.
They were nothing, said Daphne. Nothing that matters any more.
No, they were something. The memory was there in her dark brown eyes. Eyes he thought had looked on him with love. His belly cramped, rejecting.
They were poisoned, weren't they?
Poisoned? Vera echoed. Child, is that true?
Damn you, Asher!
Cried Daphne, and turned to the old woman.
I'm sorry. I had to. I couldn't trust he'd keep the faith and stay silent.
He was so sickened now, he could hardly see straight.
but Spake did. You were wrong about him, Daphne, and you're wrong about me. I ain't your innocent mage. I'm a fool as was diddled by sweet talk and lies. Yours, Matt's, Gar's, everyone's.
No, no, said Daphne, breathless. Please believe me. I love you. We need you. Your prophecy's fulfillment, this kingdom's only hope.
She reached out her hand to touch him, and he knocked it away, knocked her sideways as the power inside him drew breath like a dragon and threatened to set him on fire.
Get away from me, bitch! Get her out of here, woman, or I won't be responsible. Get out! Get out!
The magic ignited, burst from his eyes, mouth and fingers in a roar of burning snow and flaming rain. He let it consume him, didn't care if it killed him, or Daphne, or Vera. Didn't care about anything. Sobbing, Daphne let herself be pushed through the cottage and into the kitchen. She heard the door slam shut and felt Vera's hand press her into a chair.
We have to go back to him. We have to stop him.
He'll stop himself soon enough, said Vera, filling the kettle. Best he gets it out of his system before we try another sensible conversation. I've dampened the bedroom, child. He'll do it no damage.
She hiccuped, struggling for self-control.
Dampened it? When?
While you were talking.
You expected this?
A tantrum?
Nodding, Vera put the kettle on the stovetop, then opened the stove's front to rouse the coals with a poker.
Of course. Didn't you?
It's more than a tantrum. That's not a fair word. He's angry, Vera, and he's every right to be. I did deceive him. In a way, I did lie.
Vera sniffed.
You did your duty as Gervail's heir.
He doesn't think so, she whispered.
He will, in time.
She felt her eyes fill again.
He called me a bitch.
And so you are, said Vera tartly. And so am I. You think this is a business for gentlefolk?
She held Vera's challenging gaze for a moment, then looked away.
I'm sorry about Tim and Spake. If there hadn't been an accident, the cake's ruined, I'd have told you what I did.
Vera shrugged.
As you say, child, it's in the past. And after Raphael, who am I to judge you?
On the stovetop, the kettle bubbled, burping steam. Vera set out mugs and milk and frowned at the almost empty jug.
First thing in the morning, you could make yourself useful if you like, and wander along to the village. Get me more milk, since I'm almost out, and we've got company coming.
Oh, yes. Incredibly, she'd forgotten. Matt, and Gar, and Darren. Would they be here soon? She hoped so.
Why don't you keep a cow, or a goat?
'Cause there's only me, that's why, said Vera, adding tea leaves to the pot. And my few quicks help the milkman. Will you so? I'll give you directions. It's easy enough to find.
She nodded. Trying to keep me out of Asher's way?
I think it's advisable, said Vera, making the tea. For the next little while, at least. You can bring back more bacon, too. Maybe some ham. There's carrots and greens in the garden, and a big jar of pickled cabbage. Lots of eggs. I think provisions will stretch.
She took the mug that Vera offered.
Won't the villagers be curious about me?
Curious, yes. Rude, no, said Vera, smiling briefly. Tell them you're my niece come to visit. That'll answer.
The tea was hot and sweet, a welcome relief to the cold lump in her middle. Asher. She swallowed greedily, not caring that it burned.
Will it be much longer, do you think? Before the absolute end?
Vera blew on her own tea, brow furrowed with thought.
No, she said at last. Not too much longer.
It was what she thought herself. Didn't know whether hearing the suspicion confirmed made matters better or worse.
So what now? Now, child, we'll have us some supper. Then you can go to bed, and I'll sit up for Asher. And tomorrow brings us what it brings.
She wasn't hungry or tired, but there was nothing else to do. She even managed to doze a little. She heard no alarm from Vera's bedroom. Its door opened and closed 3 times, and she caught the merest murmur of voices, but no one called for her to come. Asher stayed safely within. At first light she rose, bathed, dressed, and saw to the livestock. The chickens cackled, the pigs snorted, the raw-boned horses snatched for their hay. Well, at least someone was glad to see her. She heard the cottage's back door bang and put her head round the corner of the stable. Asher. He was dressed in drab brown jacket and trews Vera must have had stored or brought with her from the city. Grim-faced, he strode across the backyard, kicked open the gate to the forest, and kept on walking. She almost ran after him, shouting. The black woods were dangerous. There were bears, wolves, people. He shouldn't go in there alone. The kitchen door opened again. Vera stood in the doorway and watched the forest's shadows swallow him, said nothing as he disappeared among the mossy tree trunks. She was calm and quiet, peaceful almost, as though she'd reached a place of balance and was happy to stay there for a while. Daphne held her breath, half hoping Vera saw her, half hoping that she didn't. She did. Nodding, acknowledging, then went back inside. Daphne sighed and followed her.
Is he all right?
Close to, Vera looked exhausted, slumped in a chair, head propped in her hands with her silver hair all which way. She nodded.
Right enough, and will be better by and by. He needs more time alone.
He won't run?
Vera snorted.
Run where? We're his only haven, and he knows it. Make us breakfast, will you, child? I'm almost too weary for breathing.
She cooked them eggs with cream and dill, settled Vera in the sitting room with tea and a blanket, then went on her little trip to the village. It was surprisingly pleasant, marching through the forest with only a basket for company, a little balm for her lacerated soul. The air was fresh and clean, scented with pine. Unseen birds whistled and called, sounding cheerful. She kept one eye out for Asher, but didn't see him. Finding the little forest community without mishap, she told all who asked that she was Vera's niece. As Vera predicted, they seemed happy with that. Gladly they sold her milk and meat and gave her a jar of honey in welcome. She felt like a fraud accepting. Walking back was a slower affair. The provision-filled basket was heavy. There was still no sign of Asher. As she reached the cottage gate, she paused and stared down the road, hopeful, but not expecting. Someone was coming towards her. Several someones. And a donkey. And a cart. She dropped the basket and ran.
Matt! Matt!
Startled, he jogged to meet her halfway.
Daphne! Daphne, what's amiss?
She held him like a long-lost sweetheart, hugging his ribs to breaking, cradled his hurt face gently in her hands, and scolded him without mercy.
I'm all right! I'm all right!
He soothed her, alarm and pleasure mingled.
Is Asher here? Is he all right?
Yes.
It was all she dared to say. Matt looked into her face and sighed.
You told him?
Yes.
And now he's angry.
she saw again that terrifying torrent of magic.
Very. I know. You warned me.
A tentatively cleared throat turned her head. It was Gar, looking fragile. She hadn't even seen him. She stepped back from Matt and managed a half-hearted curtsy.
I'm sorry, sir. Your Highness.
He shook his head, faintly smiling. Gar.
And Aaron,
she added, nodding at the old gentleman as he leaned against the rickety donkey cart.
Forgive me. You both must be exhausted. Come inside. Vera will want to...
The cottage's front door opened.
Greet her visitors, said Vera, and joined them.
She kissed Matt's cheek and touched a finger to his bruised, rubbed throat.
Welcome back, Matthias. You're a little the worse for wear.
Looking Gar up and down, she added,
And you'll be our late king's son, then?
Gar nodded. At your service, Vera. Matt's told me all about you.
Well,
the old woman said, lips pursed.
Not all about me, I'm guessing.
She turned to Darren.
And who might you be?
Darren managed a tottery bow. His Highness's secretary, madam. Good morning. This is Darren, said Gar. A dear, dear friend, and all that's left of my family. As Darren choked back unseemly emotion, Vera again considered Gar with a narrow gaze.
And why have you come here? To hide? If so, you're doomed to disappointment. There'll be no hiding for anyone in the long dark days ahead.
Gar met her appraisal, unflinching. I've come to help, he said. And also, to make amends. Vera reached out and laid her palm against his pale, thin cheek, stared deep into his eyes.
Good, for you've a lot you can do, and much to be sorry for.
Matt cleared his throat.
Not that much. Gar helped me escape the guardhouse. Darren too, and Captain Oryk.
Oryk?
Said Daphne, startled. Matt's smile was tired.
It's a long story. I'll tell it properly later, after I've spoken with Asher.
I don't think that's wise. He's angry with you too, Matt. He knows you've a part in the circle, and all that's happened.
Vera closed a warning hand about her wrist.
You'll find him in the woods yonder, Matthias, she said, pointing behind the cottage. Working out a thing or two on his lonesome. Might be he could use some company round about now. He's had a tricky night.
Matt nodded.
I heard. I also heard he's...
Aggravated?
Said Vera, eyebrows raised.
It's not surprising. A man has a right to be aggravated when he learns last of all he's born to save a kingdom. We'll see you inside directly, child. Daphne, tend to the donkey.
As Vera ushered the prince and his secretary into the cottage, Daphne rolled her eyes at Matt.
I think she and Asher spent half the night talking.
Well, he has been hardly done by, Dath, said Matt, determined to be reasonable. He had his head on the axeman's block before we saved him. That'd give any man pause.
She winced.
I didn't know. Vera hasn't yet told me what happened. We were busy with other things.
He dropped an unexpected kiss on the crown of her head.
Go coddle the donkey, Dath. I'll see you inside, by and by.
Unwilling to let him go, she twisted her fingers in his shirt front.
Be careful, Matt, please. He really is angry, and there's a power in him you can't imagine.
He kissed her again, this time on the cheek.
I'll be fine. Stop fratching.
And he walked away, without looking back. Slumped at the foot of a twisted honey pine, aching and hollow, thrumming still hours later with the echoing remnants of power, Asher heard footsteps approaching and scowled. If he had to hear one more story about dear young Raphael, he was going to puke. Or worse, do someone a mischief.
Piss off, old woman, he said unkindly.
After listening to you jaw at me all last night, my bloody ears have gone numb. I ain't interested in anything else you got to say.
That's a fine greeting for a friend,
said a hurtfully familiar voice, one that once would have been welcome.
If I am a friend, if you're willing to forgive me.
He scrambled to his feet, felt his hands clench into fists, and didn't unclench them.
Matt?
The stablemeister looked terrible, hollow eyes, sunken and bruised-looking, charred patches on his face and a livid purple bruise around his throat. He stood at a distance, a little worried, a little wary, as he should be.
I hear you're feeling aggravated.
He smiled unpleasantly.
You might say that.
You might say aggravated, don't even come close.
I don't blame you, said Matt.
His battered face was sympathetic. He sneered.
That's right generous of you.
Sighing, Matt slipped his hands in his pockets.
I wanted to tell you months ago, Asher. I wasn't permitted. If I say now I'm sorry, will it make a difference?
What's the point? Sorry won't undo what's done.
You're right. It won't,
Matt agreed. Hesitated, then took two steps closer.
But neither will sulking out here in the woods. You are what you are, Asher. I didn't make you a mage. Neither did Daphne or Vera or anyone else. It's what you were born. What prophecy meant you to be. Need you to be.
I reckon, he said conversationally, if one more person says the word prophecy where I can hear it, they're going to be bloody sorry. Matt's lips quirked into something near to a smile.
I can understand that.
Bastard. Matt was talking the way he used to talk to fractious yearlings. Calm, gentle, soothing. Any minute now he'd reach out a hand to pat him on the bloody forehead. Asher folded his arms across his chest.
So, everything those bitches told me, magic and history and dreams, what I was born for, you reckon it's true, do you?
Matt frowned.
Don't call them bitches. Is it true?
Yes. But then, he knew that already. He'd felt the rightness of Daphne's fantastic tale humming in his blood and bones, even as he'd rejected it. Vera had told the truth too, talking gently and softly throughout the long night, but it had taken him till now to admit it.
Sink the truth.
I could walk away, he said belligerent, daring Matt to contradict him. Matt nodded.
You could.
I could walk away right now and no one could stop me. Not you. Not Daphne. No one. He bared his teeth in a Conroyd smile. I'm a man of power, Matt. I could burn you with a look.
I know it, said Matt, unmoving. I felt the change when that power woke within you. Like a thousand roaring furnaces devouring a million trees it was. You could burn this whole kingdom with a look, if that's what you want. Is it?
I want to be left alone! Matt sighed.
To do what? Go where? There's nowhere to go, Ash.